Hey, everybody out there in podcast land, this is Rob. We're going to be live in just a minute with David Lombardo from ATC Memes, founder, creator, and all-around badass air traffic controller. So, stick around. You might enjoy what you hear.
Oh, what's up, guys? Is this Plain Talk Podcast?
That's Plain Talk.
What's up? Now, am I talking to Matt or am I talking to Rob? That's the question
here. Yes.
You've got both.
You've got both. What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. It's really a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you.
Good to have you guys, too. You know, when I first saw your picture, I was trying to figure out who was the instructor and who was the pilot. Then I'm like, maybe they're both instructors. And then, I just figured I'd let their own material speak for itself. So
there's also a disconnect between whose face goes with whose voice. So hopefully the Skype-ness of this will help settle that a little bit.
Well, that's why I always talk like this when I used to talk on the radio. So no
I
one
have
would
heard you on New York Center. That is you.
Southwest 4527, cross Bunts at 7000.
They're like, oh, we'll make it down quick. We'll do our best.
and good luck with your retirement, ma'am.
Yeah, good luck.
You sound like
I really appreciate it.
The elderly woman controller she's really 35, but she sounds like she should have been retired a long time ago. Controlling, it ages you.
4-5, contact the McGuardia approach.
You know, anyway. It's funny, guys. I was just reading something about a video I had posted on my page just a few moments ago. Well, a few hours ago. Time sort of flies by for me when I start getting involved in this stuff. But it was a bunch of passengers evacuating out of a Ryanair flight. And I don't know any of the history of this flight, but apparently someone's phone battery caught on fire.
Ooh.
And there's video of people... They are just jumping out of this thing. And I'm thinking to myself, that can't be protocol. But the one thing that I noticed is that they all have bags in their hands. They all have backpacks, luggage, you know.
Oh, boy.
The whole bit.
Yeah, apparently, yeah. It's one of those things that you've brought your prized possessions with you on this Ryanair flight. Because, you know, nothing says quality like flying with the Irish.
That's exactly it. You know how it is. I mean, it's sort of like our equivalent. I guess the Irish equivalent of like a... Spirit or something. It's like no frills, you know, you get what you pay for. You know, they didn't pay for safe batteries, so you know.
No, and I thought the Galaxy Note was it the Galaxy Note? Is that what the FAA banned? There were signs all over the airport about it.
The Note 7 or something. It's funny, I had a Note 5 at the time, and I played a prank on my friend. He took it out of the case. So it was my phone, but I took it out of my phone case and put it on his desk and put like hazard stickers all over it. And he literally got angry at me. He's like, don't ever joke like that again. I'm like, dude, it's a Samsung phone.
You know? I don't know the difference.
I remember that well. The Note 5 was a great phone. I'm coming to you live now from a Galaxy S8. I like this phone a lot, though. This one hasn't exploded yet. So far, so good. If I lose you, though, just assume the worst.
Yet. Hey,
make
sure.
Oshkosh.
Oh, Oshkosh was a blast. I went last year and I was there for a day, and I saw more of the show last year in a day than I did this year, because I was basically running around interviewing as many people as I could, filming airplanes that were all basically in one spot. And unfortunately, I didn't get to anything in vintage. I saw Warbirds. I got to only one building of like displays and items and stuff. And then I had to leave Thursday morning, so I was there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and in those couple of days running around, I saw less of the show. It was amazing.
A lot of times, I feel like you have to plan for those things in advance somewhere. So it's sort of like itinerize what you're going to do.
Yep.
We actually didn't make it out there this year. I went to Sun and Fun earlier this year with the idea being that just for our schedule, it would be one or the other, and I wanted to start. Kind of like get my feet wet, so to speak, in the air show scene, the fly-in scene. And so that was a good like testing ground. But now I know that there's a lot of people out there who sort of expected us to be there again. So next year we're going to be there, and hopefully it's going to be a lot of fun. But it seems to me like a lot of people flew in on Sunday. That was the big day because of the weather on Friday, Saturday. It kind of kept some people out of the sky. And so when Sunday came along, it was chaos. I listened to some of the recording from the Fisk arrivals. It's like out of control.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen anything that bad. I flew in last year on Sunday, and we got to Ripon. We rocked the wings. He sent us up to Fisk. We turned right. We made runway 36. It was not a big deal. There was barely anybody else in the sky. And I had ADS-B back then, and was really surprised at how few airplanes there were. So it must have been the weather that brought everybody out early on Sunday. And a buddy of mine from who's a newscaster and a fellow aerobatic competitor in Washington, D.C., he flew his decathlon out, and he goes, yeah, that was insane. I've never seen it like that. Like a lot of these guys, I can't believe they had the gas to hold that long.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I think there was one guy who follows ATC memes. He says, dude, I'm not kidding you. I went around 36 times. So he went back to Ripon 36 times. I'm like, by that point, I would have been like, screw it. I'm going south. See you guys later. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I'm going to a different airport.
Yeah, we're going to go to our alternate. It's Indianapolis. We have enough fuel apparently to get down there.
We're going to Uber because it'll be cheaper than paying for gas in this thing.
Probably would be cheaper. I made a kind of a funny skit based on that, just out of some of the humor I heard in some of those live ATC recordings where they're just like, you know, high wings, by wings, tri wings, X wings, just everyone just turn left. And so I kind of recreated that in my own little world. But you guys, it's great to have you as fans of ATC memes. I don't know how you found us. Then again, I really don't know how anyone finds us. They kind of just fall into it. So you guys are following.
The great Facebook algorithm. We must not upset it. We have to appease it.
And tell me about it. That's what I spend half of my time doing, is trying to understand how these sort of crawling algorithms work. But, you know, I think that most pages do it really well these days. Like if they're popular on one, they've had enough leverage to get popular on the other platform, Facebook, Instagram. The best is YouTube, though. Like, I'm telling you, man, if you get big on YouTube, like just talking to my friend Captain Joe, that guy is a monster on YouTube. He's got like 700,000 subscribers, and he is the chillest, nicest guy you'll ever meet, very humble, and I was just really inspired by that. So a lot of people on these platforms that are so full of information.
Yeah, absolutely, and some of them are full of information that maybe not everybody agrees with, and I call them Uncle Bob's online discount flight training, so kind of beware of some of that.
Which was almost the name of our company.
This is your carb heat. It will warm your feet, and it will also increase your engine RPM very significantly.
So anyway, you went to Purdue. I was doing a little research on you, and apparently, me being from Kent State University, in the 1970s, Kent State and Purdue were big rivals in the knife flight team scene. Did you know about any of this?
I had no idea of any of that, but I do know a little bit of the history of Purdue's flight program. Well, first of all, we gave Amelia Earhart the last known aircraft that she flew. I'm not sure if that's entirely the best thing we could be promoting, but she was a hell of an airwoman, right?
Yeah.
We also Aviatrix, exactly. We also had an airline. I think it was called Purdue Airlines, and listeners can look this up, but I'm pretty sure it's authentic information, but we actually did a dry lease of a DC-9 to Hugh Hefner. And so Air Force One was actually a Purdue aircraft. And I went into the catalogs of one of our libraries when I was probably like 19, because I was really curious. And my, you know, I don't know what it was. It was just my, you know, ADHD kicking in. I was like, I have to find out more information about this. And so I dug up for hours, and I found all these old pictures of like literally the Playboy airplane on the tarmac, if you want to call it that. Oh boy, he used the word.
David, you used the word. But anyway, totally true.
Now it was repainted, and of course, you know, these planes get re-registered and recycled. But yeah, totally true story. And there's like crazy pictures of like, you know, all the bunnies and stuff in the plane. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. But I never knew about the rivalry between us and Kent State. That's a new one. So
yeah, so really apparently in the 1970s, during flight team national competitions, because we weren't in the same region, the two flight schools would get the group of their toughest guys, and they'd meet out on the ramp or the apron, and they'd just kind of stand there posturing like a couple guys from Jersey going, you want to go? You want to go? And then there'd just be a big brawl.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like what happens to every frat party once you add alcohol, but with Kent State. So I would have loved to be a fly on the wall for that. Good thing they didn't have smartphones back then. That's all I can say.
There would have been a lot more people in trouble.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, we're coming to you live from Instagram Live. We have Embry Riddle versus the Community County Community College.
Mercer County. Yeah, Mercer County Community College versus Embry Riddle. They're fighting in a hallway because Embry Riddle cloisters themselves in a back room to study aircraft wreck for the continuous week until that competition exists. They don't get tans, even though they're located in Daytona Beach, Florida. They are the shiniest people you'll ever meet.
I just picture a guy like under the wing of a Cessna, like shadow boxing with like Rocky playing in the background. He's like, He's like, it's Vaughn College next weekend, you know. I actually visited Riddle a few years ago. I always tell this story. I went with my friend John. I actually had a great time. Embry Riddle is a good school. I mean, I was naive at the time, so I didn't really know much about Daytona Beach or any of the local culture, but I just went from, you know, one class of his to some random party, and I just remember thinking, this is like an aviation haven if you're into it, but unfortunately, I kind of burned out after about 20 minutes. I'm like, all right, I'm done.
The ADHD kicked in, you saw a kitten, and that was it. It was over.
Yeah, I'm like, this. I've had enough of this, you know.
But so are you a pilot yourself?
No, I'm not a pilot. You know, I actually had – I got – some basic flight training for a few hours. I was a student pilot for a few hours, but I just never finished it. And I don't know why. I think part of it was, like, you know, once again, got bored, but I think that I want to get back into it. And because now I take it way more seriously, like back when you were like, you know, 18, 19, I just didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I kind of dabbled with flying. And then I was in management stuff and aviation classes. Yeah. And I actually ended up graduating with a little bit of everything, but I never finished my, my private pilot. And I just, funny, I just mentioned a few weeks ago how I'm sort of like looking, you know, testing the waters to see what kind of flight schools are where I live and getting back into it. And I posted that as sort of out of a whim, and I got like, you know, 50 responses. Hey, dude, come on up. I'll let you borrow my plane. I'm like, whoa, you know. But then I'm like, yeah, sure. So we'll see. Hopefully I do get that within the next few years here.
Yeah,
maybe next year. I want to try and commit to it, you know? So,
yeah.
But you guys are both pilots too. So, and that's another thing too. Like, I don't know if it's true for everybody, but for me, there's always this sort of like sense of feeling like you want to know as much as you can about a field, and you can only know so much before you actually go out and do it. Like for me, a lot of controllers I know for a fact aren't pilots.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some advantage to it. You know, I'm not a pilot myself, but there has to be some sort of on the other side of the mic, so to speak, advantage in learning how to deal with what you're controlling. So I think that's really, really cool. I know a friend who's a pilot, and he's a great controller, and the way he handles pilots is just so much more methodical, I guess, for lack of a better term. I mean, I'm not to say he's a better controller because he's a pilot, but he just handles it a little differently. You know, I think that's really important.
I think it helps to understand what you're actually asking the pilot to do and understanding how they are going to comply with your instruction. I think that helps out a little bit. I'm not a controller, and whenever I try to give my students vectors and it doesn't work out, I go, look, that's why I'm a pilot. I can't do it.
Right. Yeah. I hear you. I mean, it's not for everybody. And one of the things that I think people take away from all this stuff is that there's kind of a job out there for everybody with respect to aviation. You know, like I remember in the FAA, like when I was in the center and stuff like that, there was times where people would tell me stories about how they used to be an airline pilot or they used to be a flight instructor or whatever. And they came into ATC because they were always kind of curious, like what happens on the other side of the mic. So it happens to players too. I also know people who left ATC to become airline pilots and stuff like that, you know? So, and I'm sure on both sides of that, people are like, really, you know, but hey, you got to kind of do what you got to do. So,
so have you, so you've been working, the scope for a little while. What does an airplane doing aerobatics look like on a scope or have you seen that?
Well, when I used to be in New York Center for the domestic areas, they used to have sometimes all sorts of stuff happen over Pennsylvania. You know, there was like VFR flight aerobatics. A lot of times the VFR guys all look like little Vs on the screen and you're not going to see a lot of information or even an altitude readout. Sometimes you get the altitude, but a lot of times you'll just see quick movements and quick returns and altitude changes, but it's not going to be like, oh my God, that guy's doing a split S with a reverse. You know, you're not going to be able to see stuff like that. Now, on a center scope, though, it's obviously the scale is going to be encompassing a larger area. So if you're working with like fusion low-level Tracon stuff, they're going to be able to see like the whites of the eyes of the pilot, you know. And I don't know how accurate that radar is, but they literally it's the resolution of the radar, and also the return rate of the radar is much faster. And so when you talk about radar resolution, you're really talking about how quickly the radar is pinging, right? So you get more information in a given amount of time. I think those guys probably see more of it. But to a center controller, it's more like, whatever. Sometimes we would get the skydiver guys. So they would jump out of a VFR plane, and then the guy would – I mentioned this on another podcast too. The guy would stay on a transponder code that they would issue, and then you could totally see the readout of the altitude because you have a flight plan on them and stuff, and you're just following along. And the guy, after he would drop off the skydivers, he'd race back to the airport, and you would get sort of like X's on the altitude readout. And what this means is that our flight data, basically the processors, FTPs, are like, they cannot keep up with the transponder sending information. And so it just says XXX.
Oh, wow.
Triple X.
You know? I want to be on that flight.
Wow, November 700. Yeah, but anyway, if you see triple X, it basically means that the altitude is not registering properly because you're overfeeding information. And it's usually because the guy is descending too fast. So sometimes you do see that. That's kind of interesting trivia a lot of pilots don't know about. But
no, I definitely wouldn't know that. Over time,
the processes are better now, but this is back in the good old days of 2015. So who knows?
We'll see how ADS-B changes all that.
Well, there's a lot of talk about ADS-B changing things, for example, that are currently non-radar, obviously, because there's a lot of areas over the ocean that are not radar. And one of the most particularly interesting ones to me is the Gulf of Mexico and the Gulf Coast Service. They have a ton of traffic that's all low level. A lot of it's helicopters going out to the oil rigs and stuff.
Yeah.
And they might have already had ADS-B sectors essentially now, you know, already implemented. But you can now see these helicopters land in the middle of the ocean down to literally sea level, you know, and take back off into the sky. And it's all done by ADS-B reception. So that's really kind of cool.
Wow.
Stuff like that was going to radically change the world. You know, people use that pretty loosely, but I think it really will. So, but you know, it's weird too, because we do a lot of satire, obviously. ATC memes is a joke page. I run it to keep myself sane. But at the end of the day, I'm actually really interested in this stuff, the technology behind it. There's a company called Ariane, and they work with Elon Musk, actually, of all people. And they're trying to get – well, not even trying. They are literally putting into the sky satellites, a constellation of satellites that are going to eventually enable what is going to become space-based ADS-B, which is really kind of cool. And it's basically what it sounds like. It's ADS-B, but the receivers are, well, in space. And
so in space.
Ooh, it sounds incredible what you just did, by the way. I don't know what you did.
I clicked a button. Hey, Matt, calm check. You still there?
Oh, I'm here.
All right. Just got a question?
Yeah, I got a couple here. So is it Dave? Do you prefer Dave or David?
Either or. Dave is one less syllable, though, so go for that. It's easier.
Yeah, all right, Dave. So, you know, it's something that's always kind of struck me as a good story is my first time on the radio about 3-4 years ago. I was at Hanscom Field in Massachusetts and on the West Ramp, and I got really nervous, and I called the controller, and I said, you know, Hanscom Ground, November 12345, at breast ramp, ready for taxi, and it's just hilarious. Couldn't stop laughing for about 40 seconds. And,
Delta ramp, you know,
taxi to triple Delta. Right. But, so then more recently, I guess about 4 or 5 weeks ago, Rob and I were flying to Provincetown out of, Norwood, and, I basically called the ground controller, was looking for flight following, and said, you know, November 12345 with request. And the guy responded and said, well, I hope you don't want me to sing. And he's got really, really just some of these controllers have great attitudes and great senses of humor. So curious, how much did your sense of humor that you have in ATC memes translate to your job as a controller when you were in the tower?
Well, I don't know if it all did. I think it also depends on the situation at hand. Like there's times where ATC was like super serious. I mean, don't get me wrong. But in that chair, to me, I tried to be as best as I can in terms of focusing and trying to apply a bunch of knowledge, because it's an endless amount of data you got to memorize and apply. But at the same time, there is sort of like this stream of consciousness that I'm really, really into when I use humor to like diffuse situations. And so sometimes I would, you know, try to make things funny. I remember one time I saw a plane that had the choppy arrival into Atlanta, and you kind of reach out to the pilot. You're like, how's your ride? You know, it's oh, well, it's smooth. It's just like, well, your arrival says you're choppy. He's like, then he comes back and he says, flight chop. You know what I mean? Like, you don't file those reports because you know that they're probably bogus. But the point is, sometimes the team, like if the team that's working together can make or break it, you know? And sometimes if you get a bunch of guys with like-minded sense of humor, it can be a lot of fun. I think the pilots though, sometimes vibe with it. I'll tell you a quick story. I remember when the guy, a controller, he said, and I always witnessed this. He said, FedEx 123, can you accept a descent of like 35 feet or minute or greater? And he goes, yeah, sure thing, center. The packages don't scream. That was pretty funny. Of course, I've also witnessed the angry British man. The guy would none of the planes were listening, so you can occasionally change your voice, be like, "Oh, Southwest 2554, you can descend now." And all of a sudden, everyone just listens so well because they're thinking to themselves, "Like, is this even a real transmission? Like, what's going on?
Who's on this? You're on guard."
Yeah, you're on guard. Oh, yeah, there were moments sometimes where you hear reports of rogue transmissions. ELTs go off all the time. Sometimes a lot of times they're accidental and stuff like that. Guard frequency, sometimes, yeah, I got out of control. I remember having to, see people turn off guard. But to answer your question, like how humor relates into it, I think that like there's a sort of element where like you have to be able to laugh because it's so overwhelming at times for some people that you have to just find some sort of diffuser of the hard times. Humor does a great thing in doing that. So yeah, there was, and honestly, a lot of the stuff where I created the audio myself, it was birthed out of just things that I thought personally were funny, you know, like watching a trainee or myself, you know, call the wrong sector, like myself do this multiple times. It's like, dude, why do you keep doing this? And like, of course, now I know it's because I literally just couldn't, you know, think of that. I it's like, what are you doing? But when you step back from it, you realize how ridiculous you are, you know, in training, because everyone has their rough moments in training. So humor at myself was really how I birthed ATC memes. So that kind of answers your question. I think it's really important to have that.
So. Yeah, it sounds like on a long and busy day, a little sense of humor could go a long way to giving yourself a little bit of a break, a little bit of a mental break if you can sneak it in.
Yeah, you know, you can. You do what you can, and you never want to make it more complex than it has to be. Like yeah. Sometimes I think there's multiple personalities, obviously, that you'll meet in any field, and some people really, really vibe with it. And I've met amazing controllers who probably aren't even that interested in aviation. You know what I mean? Like they're doing it because it's a job, and like, you know, you do it and that's it. So everyone's got their own.
Speaking of different personalities, can you tell the difference between pilots who are flying Moonies or Bonanzas or Cirruses?
Well, the Cirruses, they come on there. So, like, this is a Cirrus with a shootout. I'm like, what? Shoot? No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I mean, to me, the Moonie pilots to me always seem more. I just have always associated them with more of like the weekend warrior kind of guys. That's not saying that they are or aren't, but that's always what I've associated with for some reason. Cessna guys, I don't know. I mean, they fly their planes, their single engine aircraft. It could be anybody. You know, a lot of times it's flight trading, obviously. So sometimes they won't talk to us because they're just doing VFR or basic stuff. Or if they are doing a cross country, it's going to be like really basic stuff. But I don't think there's any difference in the type of pilot that's flying it. However, I will say that it seems to me that there's a lot more of the higher end clientele flying a Cirrus because they're newer planes, you know, so they're more expensive and you're not going to get like, it's not as many people flight training and doing their, you know, weekend exploring in something like a SR-22 or something like that. But that's just my experience. Obviously there are people out there that do it. And also it depends on what part of the country you are, what part of the world you're in. Here in the Northeast, there's a ton of traffic out in the summer of VFR. Everyone's got a plane, seems like. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. It depends.
But if you live near a flight school, too, like Purdue, we have Cirrus. I think we have Cirrus now. When I was there, they had Warriors, I want to say, or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now they've upgraded the whole fleet. And so, you know, it's going to be the same type of pilot in a different aircraft. So yep. it all really depends.
So what sectors are you? Oh, sorry.
No, I was going to say, it seems to me that the pilots who talk really low and mumbled, like, they always descend really fast. I don't know why there's, like, American 123, descend 18, flight level 190. He's like, and then he's already at the altitude. Like,
all right, watch out for those guys. What sectors are you working nowadays?
Oh, well, you didn't hear the story. I actually left the FAA last year. I didn't control it anymore. Yeah, and I had a whole mess of problems trying to figure that one out because it was a really hard decision for me to leave. Work for Department of Transportation now in basically organization of the whole road network. It's a whole different story. But I no longer control actively. And so a big part of it was trying to come to terms with running ATC memes too, because it's like, how can you run ATC memes if you're not even a controller actively? You know what I mean? But I kind of made it work for myself because it was a way of being a creative outlet and still staying connected to the industry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to be honest, I had a great time in learning what I did in the FAA during my time there. I was working the oceanic sectors and training for a few months, and that was wild. Oceanic control off the East Coast is really a whole different ballgame. It's like air traffic control people don't even think about. You know what I mean? It's just, it's that was to me some of the coolest experiences I've had within ATC. And then during the domestic areas, it was all the area over Pennsylvania, and they're basically feeding like Potomac and feeding New York TRACON. So that big, huge corridor, it's kind of like my introduction to learning about ATC, you know? So the Northeast is a crazy place to work. I think that many people underestimate just how much transitional traffic there is, like no one's level.
Yeah.
I don't mean to say that people who work like centers where things are level is easier, because that's by no means the case, but it's just a whole different type of controlling. And so those are the sectors I work. It's kind of, a lot of people think that New York Center is sort of like an extension of the TRACON. It's probably not that far from the truth, you know? It's really kind of wild.
That's pretty cool. Well, congratulations on getting out. You made it.
I think to myself, you know, it was a tough decision to leave. Like, sometimes I miss it. I really do. But other times I'm like, it was a good decision for me. You know, it was a good decision for me in the long run. So I'm very happy.
That's awesome. And Dave, I had the opportunity to read one of your articles. I think it was an interview you had online somewhere. I got to pull it up, but you explained it quite well about kind of why you left and why you're focusing your time on ATC memes. And, you know, it sounded like it was a great transition for you. And speaking of that, you know, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got into ATC memes, maybe like the short version? Because I think a lot of your listeners, a lot of our listeners already know the bulk of it already. But anything that you can share with us about kind of like why you got started, why it's still such a passion of yours, and where you see it going in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people ask that question all the time as if I'm supposed to know how I ended up where I did. And I'm always trying to, you know, increase my output and become a better artist and become a better listener and a better speaker. And honestly, it's all part of a transition where you're just trying to make things better. It's like, this is what I do with my time, and this is what I want to show the world. And so that's kind of what came when I decided to start a page. Very low key, by the way. It was just like people submitted memes. But I'll tell you how it really began. I mean, I was a controller in training at New York Center, and I ended up in New York Center because I always wanted to be involved in aviation, and I got into air traffic control. To be completely frank with you, I never really wanted to go to the center. I was always looking for a tower. I really wanted to work at a tower. That's the God's honest truth, because to me it was like, I just liked looking out the damn window and watching planes, working planes. I like to see what's happening. I'm very, very visual, you know, like that's just who I am. So when I got the call that I was going to the center, I'm like, I don't know about this. Like, be totally honest now that it's all in the past. But I went, you know. And so during my time in training, I was having a good time training in the initial stages of it. And eventually, like everything that happens in my life, I kind of got a little bored. I'm like, all right, like this is not really happening as fast as I'd like. You know what I mean? And so what I did is I sort of contacted an old friend, kind of posted something about it in a transient state, like, hey guys, check this out, but not like direct messaging him, you know. But I made a page, and my friend who had noticed it said, hey dude, like we should just continue to build off this and call it like a meme controllers, you know. And when we started it, what inevitably became ATC memes with my partner at the time was only like 10 or 20 pictures and like 15, 20 fans of really dumb stuff. Like,
oh, we lost him. Well, you're back. you went dead silent there. It was 10 and 20, and then that was it.
Oh, you hear me now?
Yeah. All right. Sorry.
Yeah, okay.
We're 5x5, yeah. And so we were like 10, 20 pictures or whatever, and there was only a few dozen fans at the time. But then what happened was people started making their own memes. And once that happened, then it started really running away because everyone wants to be part of that. They want to share and become part of something, the community, you know? And that's where all the memes come from, like the dog and the baby, like the trainer looking at the kid and the meme with the guy, hey, you got any of that primetime leave? And the Kermit the Frog looking out the window and saying, I wonder if my shitty landings think about me. You know, all that. All all those classics that today we just laugh so hard at. But that's the kind of the era where they began. And so the page was like a creative outlet for a few months, and it grew to a few thousand fans, but nothing huge. Like every night or so, I would just share what the fans posted. But what happened one night was that I was just feeling particularly restless for whatever reason. And I'm like, you know what? Let me try something here. I'm going to go on to Live ATC and record a bunch of the sector that I was going to be training on, because I felt it was something, again, that just it was more exciting to me than studying a book. I don't know why. That was probably a big part of it. Yeah. I have a really hard time sitting and studying the book. And so I went on to the Live ATC and I was like, wow, this is so cool. Like I can visualize it. And like there was one night where I swear, man, it just clicked. Like I was really into it. I was like, I'm going to kill it, blah, blah, blah. And then as I was recording it onto my computer in Audacity, something happened and I sent it to a pitch shifter. And so the audio of the pilots got like all jumbled, and it was like, you know, it was like how ATC meme sounds. It was like, New York Center, this is, you know, it sounds like I somewhere along the line.
So that's like, where that came from.
Yeah. And somewhere along the lines, I'm like, oh God, like I have to do this. I have to record a whole skit using a pilot's voice that sounds like this. And what I'll do is I'll make the pilot sound like a Cessna pilot in a 150 requesting to do like endless touch and goes at the world's busiest airport when the controller is totally down the crapper. And I spent the next like 2 or 3 hours just hammering this out and recording it. And I put the audio on ATC memes. So like, I went to bed, you know, and it's like the same old story. I woke up in the morning and we had like 9,000 more fans. I'm like, what is going on right now? And the thing has shared like over 2,000 times. And that's how the modern day ATC meme sort of came to be. It was all based on just initially sharing some basic memes as photos and kind of transitioning into the more multimedia stuff. A lot of it just based on sort of a whim of an impulse, I guess. But the rest is history, as they say. And then eventually it evolved into bigger things. We started doing the apparel. You know, we started doing video. We started partnering with other pages. I've met so many cool people who are so much more accomplished than I am through this page. And it's really been amazing for the networking abilities that it's brought to us. So that's how the whole thing started. And each one of the members of the page, there's really three of us now who run it. They all have their own unique story that kind of goes into it. But that's how my story plays into the creation of the page.
Well, Dave, thank you very much for going out
Dave,
there
actually
making this. What you got, Matt?
Yeah, wait. Say again. There was like two of you guys stepping on each other.
Dave, I'm going to interrupt Rob for a second because we do take questions from our listeners, and one of them has requested, they want to know if Rob can be featured as one of your models wearing your sectional leggings and a pedo tube cover remove before flight T-shirt.
No,
not sure if that's possible, but hey.
Anybody who knows me personally knows that, you know, I'm a pretty open-minded dude, so I'm not against it. I don't know if all of our fans would be up for it, though.
Who the heck is this guy?
Can you tell us about – sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, people that I do photograph, they all say that, you know, they do – anytime you guys do – one of the things I do is photography, and it's always so funny because, like, a photo shoot always goes the same way. Like, you actually plan the lighting based on it too. Like, the first 45 minutes are always going to be kind of awkward, and then after about an hour, something happens, and everyone's just, like, you start having fun. You know, it's like a date, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, now we're loosened up. So, anyway, I would save the pants for, like, the second half of the photo shoot. Right? We hit those long shadows, you know, the sun coming over the water. It's like, yeah, that was great, man. We're going to know each other really well by then. You know?
Got to get into the golden hour.
Yeah, the golden hour. It's exactly it. I'm sorry.
I was actually just going to ask, where can our listeners get your sectional leggings? What website?
Yeah, we sell them at radarcontact.com. That's the official store of ATC memes, radarcontact.com. you of course could always message us too, but the easiest way is to go through our store at that site. And we also have a blog too, which is not as updated as yours is because we don't have a podcast, but all the, you know, main articles and the store link to it, it's just atcmemes.com. So those sites are where you can go for that. We offer custom clothes too. This has probably been the biggest selling thing, just getting the custom colors, the airspace. People have requested essentially everything you could ever imagine, sometimes to much of our, you know, demise, trying to edit it on. You know, it's like, we do custom stuff for you guys, radarcontact.com.
Well, hey,
awesome.
David, thank you very much for coming on the Plane Talk podcast today. And thank you very much for starting ATC Memes. It's brought joy and laughter to flight instructors, students, commercial pilots, and controllers all alike. And I think it's a unifying effort and a unifying tool. So I think it's been outstanding. And thank you for putting it together.
Absolutely. I appreciate the fanship. Thanks, guys, for reaching out. It's been a pleasure to be here, and hopefully you always continue to fly high and keep climbing, and yeah, hopefully see you guys at one of these big fly-ins one of these days, because I'll be there.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll get together. Absolutely.
Sounds good.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it so much.
All right, Dave. Us too. Thanks for the time.
Take it easy. Have a nice night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What the hell? This is happening.